I am Liza Corso. I am both the moderator and I'm also going to be a speaker, short speaker, meaning short, well, I'm a short speaker, but also short in terms of my length compared to some of my panelists. And we are very much hoping to keep enough time for some good question and answer and discussion at the end of the session. So, as noted, I'm Liza Corso. I'm with CDC, and those of you who stay apprised of CDC know we just got reorganized again. So my new home at CDC is the Office of State, Tribal, Local, and Territorial Support. I am joined on the panel by Kay Bender, who is the President and CEO of the Public Health Accreditation Board, and she will be speaking about, of course, the work that is going on to establish and launch a national accreditation program for state, tribal, local, and territorial health departments. Next, of course, Karen Breckenridge from the Association of Public Health Labs, and she is going to be speaking to the Laboratory System Improvement Program and all the work that has occurred to establish laboratory standards for the lab public health system and how that relates to some quality improvement activities that that should generate. And finally, Justin Girding from CDC, but from the National Center for Environmental Health. And he'll be talking a bit about the environmental public health performance standards. None of us have any personal financial relationships to disclose, so there's the caveats that we are requested to share by APHA. The whole purpose of this session is to share a little bit about the connections and demystify the what all these different programs are all about and how they relate to each other. I think a lot of people might be familiar with the more long-standing National Public Health Performance Standards work. I'm going to first talk just a little bit about that, but that started back in 1998, so it's been out there. I'm not going to belabor a lot of the discussion about what it's all about, because I think there are a lot of folks who might know about that. Additionally, we have a session after this that will go a bit more into depth on some of the work that has occurred, and I'll mention the details about that session momentarily. So we'll talk about the similarities and distinctions between the national performance standards, the work going on in agency accreditation, and of course some of the discipline-specific activities going on, such around and the lab and environmental health performance standards work that we've got up here are just two examples, this, of course, is very representative of how all of these things should come together to really improve public health. Talk about, of course, the relationship and how they all relate to the ultimate goal of improving public health and ultimately public health outcomes. So as I said, I am going to spend just a little bit of time talking about the national performance standards. How many of you would say you're pretty familiar or familiar to some extent with the national performance standards? Okay, those are a lot of hands. So I think we are right to say let's not belabor some of the general background and basics of this. But for those of you who aren't too familiar or just need a refresher, there are three assessment instruments that are part of the overall National Public Health Performance Standards Program: the State Public Health System Assessment, one for local public health systems, and a third one that addresses the boards of health or local public health governance. And the little pictures you see up here are, of course, the covers of those different assessment instruments. This has been a long-standing and very collaborative partnership between CDC. Hopefully everyone recognizes the acronym APHA. ASTO, the Association of State and Territorial Health Officials. NACHA, which of course represents local health departments. NALBO, which represents boards of health. The National Network of Public Health Institutes. And they play an important role, not just with a connection to the constituency of institutes, which often are the neutral convener for doing these system assessments and improvement planning in states, but they've also been a great partner with this effort in terms of some of the training and technical assistance kind of user coordination work. So those monthly calls that we've had among the National Public Health Performance Standards users is something that they really coordinate. And finally, the Public Health Foundation, which plays a role with supporting the data and reporting system. So once you've undertaken the public health system assessment. You can go online, submit the data and the responses, and you get a report that really summarizes the key strengths, weaknesses, and should ideally, of course, catalyze you towards that improvement planning that is the whole reason you've undergone the process of using these assessment instruments. The very, very simplistic timeline at a glance, as I mentioned, this is one of the more long-standing efforts. We actually began this back in 1998, and very intensive, many iterations process to develop the version one instruments, which were, of course, released with OMB clearance as a data collection and reporting tool. In 2005, we actually began a process to develop version two, knowing it's important that these standards remain current and there's opportunities to continue to improve them. And so in 2007, those version two instruments were released. At this point now, in 2010, we're at the point where version two is still in use, still a viable tool with a OMB data collection approval. But we're just now beginning to think through the work towards, we are not calling it version three, we are calling it re-engineering of the National Public Health Performance Standards, because it's going to be very important to really think about what do these standards need to look like in the context of now, of course, the launching of accreditation, all that is also going on with public health practice, and knowing that there are real opportunities to build on the strengths of the program and to minimize either, whether you call them the weaknesses or the less helpful aspects of the program. That's something that we're really trying to take into account with the re-engineering. And directly after this is a session, Teresa Dobb, Dennis Lenaway, Ehud Maron are all going to speak at that session. And the purpose is, it's a very troublesome number because the session, this session is session 3192. That's session 3291. So I think they did that to just make us dyslexics. It's the exact same number, but it's the National Public Health Performance Standards near, far, and in the future. And near meaning we're going to talk about the domestic use of the performance standards, far meaning Ehud Maron is going to talk about how they've used it in Israel, and in the future, where are we taking it with the re-engineering. If you want to learn even more about what's going on with that, I commend that session to you. The four concepts applied in the National Public Health Performance Standards, just the quick refresher, based on the 10 essential services, this is all about the public health system. So all of those entities together that contribute to public health at the state or local level, this is not just about the agency. That's a huge distinction to, of course, the agency accreditation activities being supported through FAB. The standards themselves describe an optimal level of performance. So we look with great suspicion on anyone who gets 100% across the board. because we've really set these as the gold standards and set these standards describing what truly the best of the best would be doing, the gold standard for local or state public health performance. And of course, all of that is because it's intended to support a process of quality improvement. We have heard a lot anecdotally and through stories and of course through evaluations of why folks have proceeded with using the National Performance Standards. Our stats and our stories tell us the same thing. First of all, they really want to understand what is it that they're doing, what's their baseline measure of performance. The National Public Health Performance Standards has really been one of the few, if only, nationally developed and recognized assessment tool and set of standards up till now. So it was one of the more obvious choices. And it was something that was seen as the opportunity to really help improve public health system effectiveness. Many of you may be aware that the performance standards, the local public health system assessment component, is also part of the MAP process, a broad community health improvement process. So of course, many local users have, of course, used the performance standards as part of that overall MAP process. Very briefly, since the inception of the program, this is just a quick fly-through of some of the use that has occurred in the field and the different shades of blue, from the very light blue, middle blue, darker blue, represent the percentage of local jurisdictions or percentage of local boards of health where these instruments have, of course, been used. Now, as I said, the purpose of this panel is to really talk about how are all of these activities, how do they all relate, and how do they all, what are their distinctions or their differences? I've mentioned, of course, that the National Public Health Performance Standards really is all about something that focuses on the public health system as a whole. The standards and the concept of doing this process really also acknowledges the agency as the hub or the likely convener for that public health system. Likewise, but looking at it from the other side of the equation, so to speak, agency accreditation, as you'll hear from Kay, really does focus on the agency, but it also, FAB has been truly careful to also acknowledge that the agency plays an important role in mobilizing partners and the fact that the agency has a role in building the concept of that public health system. The LSIP program, of course, focuses on labs, also appreciative of the concept of the system, and same with the Environmental Public Health Performance Standards, which really is something that gives that heavy, deep look at environmental public health. My last bullet here, and others, this is not intended to be the entirety of what's going on in these areas, of course, again, just a sampling. How does it all fit together? As you hear from the next three speakers, a few points for you to consider as you're kind of filtering what you're hearing. You're going to hear that all of this work has been based on the same essential services framework as the foundation. And of course, those essential services are represented by the wheel diagram, many of you might be familiar with. There has been an awful lot of collaboration in not just the development or redevelopment in the performance standards case, but also the support of implementation, with some states even using multiple assessments together to really understand what does their performance look like. And so these are really intended to be mutually reinforcing, not redundant tools. And again, that's yet another principle we're trying to continue to apply as we approach the re-engineering, because really the whole point is these are all intended to promote quality improvement. And so thinking of that, how do these all really fit together? Well, it's all about having a strong health department, a strong public health system, community partners, strong connections with community partners, and of course a workforce that builds the public health infrastructure, all for the purpose of impacting all of those different programs that really make up what public health is all about, ultimately leading to better health outcomes, reduced disparities, better preparedness. And so the belief, of course, the genesis of all the activities that we talk about is that if we can make some investments up front, it's going to have some dividends and impacts at the back end. So with that said, I am going to pass the podium and the mic on to Dr. Kay Bender, who's going to talk to you a little bit about accreditation. I think a lot of people might be familiar with Kay, but she, of course, is president and CEO of the Public Health Accreditation Board, but she has been a longstanding participant in the Exploring Accreditation and now FAB activities. But before coming to FAB as an actually employee, she was a dean at the School of Nursing in Mississippi, and before then even the deputy director in the Mississippi Department of Health. So she's seen kind of all of the different aspects of public health practice.
Thank you, Liza. Okay, for those of you who were in the earlier session, you are going to see some of the same slides, but I hope you'll hear different content framed a little differently. And I will promise you that if you attend the other two sessions that I'm doing on accreditation, I'll give you a discount on your application fee when you apply for accreditation. I'm beginning to feel like there's following here. Either some of you guys have no lives or All right, but it's cool to see you here after the first one. Just for those who might not be familiar with Public Health Accreditation Board, we are a nonprofit voluntary accreditation organization, and our goal is to manage this accreditation process for the purpose of advancing public health performance. And it's key to this conversation that, like my colleagues in environmental health and in lab and some of the others that I'll talk about as part of our think tanks, it's key to note that we have great partnerships, as Liza said, with government, but we are not government. Part of what we envisioned when we concluded the recommendations for the Exploring Accreditation report was that, you know, CDC could have decided to be the accrediting body for health departments. Other governmental entities could have decided to do that. We certainly have four states where the state health department, maybe in partnership with a public health institute, manages an accreditation system. But that study concluded that the independent nature of a nonprofit organization is key to what we hope will make our accreditation process slightly different than others. So for those of you that were in the other session, this will be a repeat for those that weren't. What have we done so far? We've spent the last 3 years developing the standards and measures, and as Liza said, based on the same framework as the National Public Health Performance Standards. Our standards work group, some of you are in the room, pulled from about 14 different sources, existing sources for standards and measures development. And that was great because those had already been tested and already been vetted and already determined to really reflect the practice of public health. We also developed the process, you know, what you do when, which steps. We developed a guide to accreditation. These are all on our website. The guide to accreditation just basically says, if you're thinking about it, start here. The interpretation of the standards and measures, as you can well imagine, it's one thing to develop them. It's another thing to figure out what you meant when you developed them. And some of you in the room that were site visitors for us for the beta test know exactly what I'm talking about with that. We developed the guide for site visitors, the training. And now, where we are is on that last bullet. Everything that's on that slide is up for revision. As I said in the other session, we want the standards, measures, and the way we conduct the process, emulating a lot of what the National Public Health Performance Standards did and the successes and lessons learned there, science-based, evidence-based, and practice-driven. And so hopefully you'll test us over time to see whether we did that. Liza's pretty much covered that both accreditation and the National Public Health Performance Standards do have that common basic framework for the essential public health services and similar concepts and all that. I guess the one thing that I want to stress here that really makes, I think, the link, because I came from a state where we had worked with the National Public Health Performance Standards. Once a site has worked through the National Public Health Performance Standards, even though that focus is on the system, I think that it's great development for then the work on accreditation, because so many of our standards and measures speak to, if you do this, do you do it alone or in partnership, and what's the evidence of those partners, and who is it that that does what? And as the Community Health Improvement Plan is done, we don't expect that to be all about the agency. It's about what is it that needs to be done in that community to improve health status. And so the fact that a health department has actually used the National Public Health Performance Standards, I think, put some farther ahead in determining or identifying who those partners are and what their role is. The infamous beta test, which we won't talk a lot about today, we did just conclude that part thanks to many of you who are in the room. You can see we had a very diverse array of sites deliberately all across the country, and we are now in the process of receiving the evaluations from all of that work, and we think it'll take us about 6 to 9 months to do the revisions, roll out the program, and, help you to know what to do next. I'm going to skip through to this. What we've learned about programs and accreditation is germane to the next two speakers, because they certainly, they're not the only, but they reflect huge partners with FAB in terms of working through how the accreditation process relates to programs. We decided early on, based on the recommendations of the Exploring Accreditation study, that FAB's accreditation, for now, needs to focus on the agency's core capacities, that backbone that the Institute of Medicine study talked about. What is it, comprehensively, that a health department really needs to consider, either alone or in partnership, that really gives it the impetus to hang that shingle out that says we're a health department? And so we chose early on to stay with that framework. That's big enough work. Now, the standards work group did recognize the second bullet, and that is that health departments are made up of a collection of public health programs, and often those are operating in silos. And I'm saying that based on experience and not on anything that, you know, FAB says publicly, but you all know it if you're there in practice. It's very often a challenge, no matter how small or large the health department is, to get programs to work together. We also know that successful program management rests on a strong infrastructure. If the basic health department's capacity to manage itself is fragmented, or it's fractured, as many of them are right now with the economy like it is, the programs will suffer. I can't tell you how many times, just from practical experience, we would have program review of one of our grants from CDC or HRSA or WIC or Department of Education, and very often their findings or their suggestions for quality improvement for us were not necessarily related to failing to follow the objectives or meet the objectives we've said we would meet in the programmatic grant. Rather, it might have something to do with our HR system. You couldn't get positions filled because, or maybe our financial system. What do you mean the last budget report you had was 6 months ago? Or maybe part of that grant called for working on policy development, and we got behind in that capacity because our policy office was fractured or fragmented in some way. So FAB's operating right now on the assumption that accreditation can bring together that platform upon which programs at rest. These are our domains. For those of you who aren't familiar with them, some of you, like Jack Thompson out there, can probably recite them in your sleep, right, Jack? And others of you can. The one difference you may see, there's a little different language in Part B with the 10 domains that we based on the Central Public Health Services. Maybe slight language changes, but they don't differ, as Liza said, in the concepts that are included there. These are about the agency, not about the system. We did add Part A because, unlike the National Public Health Performance Standards, where there's really not a lot of need to talk about contract management and HR and IT and some of those kinds of in governance and that sort of thing, there is for accreditation. And so Part A speaks to those items and how the health department functions. What I really want to spend the last few minutes talking about, hopefully will link to the next two speakers, and that is FAB's think tank approach. You know, it's one thing to develop the standards and measures in the process and to test that through the beta test. It's another thing to deal with issues such as Eliza mentioned, both environmental health and labs have performance-based standards out there already. And so, you know, I'm in a health department and I'm trying to make sure my lab is consistent with LSIP, for example. How does that link with what we're doing with accreditation? And so we had a lot of those comments to come up early in the vetting process for our standards measures. So we use the think tank format, which is a day or two, maybe a sequence of days, to explore those specific areas. We look at what FAB's doing, we look at what our partners in the programmatic areas are doing, and we go from there. And some of you have seen this slide before, but I want to focus on not to steal the thunder of the other two, but hopefully to lay the groundwork for that. The second bullet talks about environmental health. We've partnered with the environmental health community. We've held one think tank back in 2009, and we'll hold another one in early 2011. The purpose of that is to look at what is it FAB is measuring, what do the environmental public health performance standards measure, and where do we have some kind of consensus around which of those two approaches describe those core components, and then where can FAB support the programmatic side with the examples. And let me sort of go back just a little bit, not to make you too dizzy here. But under, for those of you who haven't seen the standards and measures, under each of these domains are measures. And under those are requirements for documentation. How do you as a health department think you met those measures? We rolled out the beta test with examples. We ask for, let's pick domain 6, enforcing public health laws and regulations. And some of those measures, we would say, give us two examples of how you've recently enforced public health regulation. Well, what we've heard anecdotally, we'll see what the evaluation says, is that many health departments and many of our site visitors have said, can you be a little more specific? Where we thought we were giving flexibility, many sites and our site visitors have asked us to be more specific. Well, in rides, the environmental public health community saying, yes, we can help you be specific on that one. Let's ask them specifically for two programmatic examples in these areas because these contribute the most right now, according to our work, to improve the public's health with regard to environmental health and enforcement of rules and regulations. That's one example. I could go into several, but I won't. That's another whole talk in and of itself. What we're trying to do here is to draw the natural link and to avoid redundancy. I want to give you two other quick ones, and then I'll close. Tribal. I know we have an NIHB colleague in the room. The National Indian Health Board has been a wonderful national partner for us. And when the state and local public health standards were developed, because tribes are sovereign nations, we all thought that, you know, maybe the state standards would work. And then for some smaller tribal health departments, we thought, well, maybe the local standards would work. And we, at the same time, NIHB was focusing on their own exploring accreditation project, and those were all coming together. And at our think tank, what we learned is that while we had three tribal sites in the beta test, there are nuances associated with running a public health department in Indian country that are just different than state and local. Now, when I say that to you today, that sounds like a no-brainer, doesn't it? But it took us a while to figure that out. So now, without compromising the standards and the measures and what they intend to get at, we have a tribal standards work group who's helping us to figure out what it is those measures, how they need to be framed, and what those examples need to be called and how that needs to be stated, to make them not only more culturally appropriate, but to help us measure exactly what we were intended to measure. And so we'll be vetting that version of those standards between December and January. The NIHB will do that. There's actually a flyer about that at our booth, booth 1713, if you're interested. Last but not least, Public Health Labs. We held a think tank. Karen Breckenridge was actually our key partner at APHL with that. And got some great recommendations from the lab. And you know, one of the one low-hanging fruit things that FAB learned about labs? You know, here we are, we had all been, you know, practicing, some of my board health officers with deputies, whatever else. And we learned a lot from that public health lab, but one of the things that we should have known all along is that there are resources within the public health lab staff, directors and staff, who've been working on quality and performance improvement forever. You know, they get it. And yet, when we just anecdotally ask many of our beta sites, you know, have you tapped your lab director for some insights about QI models? Hadn't thought about it. And so that's the kind of interchange and interplay that we hope to continue to get from our think tanks. What will FAB ultimately do with the think tank reports? Each of them have actionable recommendation to the board of directors in the short run for consideration of revisions to our standards measures, and I think from both of these you'll hear a little bit more about that, and the inclusion of specific examples in our documentation requirements. Who knows in the long run what that link with programmatic accreditation might look like? That's that near, far, and what's the other? Near, far, and in the future that we'll need to discuss. So with that, I will close and turn it over now to Karen, who will talk some more about the voluntary lab accreditation, the LSIP program. Thank you.
Good afternoon, and thank you for coming to this session today, and thank you to Liza and Teresa for putting it together and inviting APHL to be a part of it. The objectives for my portion are listed here and in your handouts as well. For those of you that may not be familiar with the Association of Public Health Laboratories, I just thought I'd share a couple of slides about our vision and our mission, and to be able to remind you that we are all working for the better of public health. We are, as with most of the associations, a 501c nonprofit. We have over 800 members that represent laboratorians from state, local, agricultural, food labs, government laboratories, environmental labs, and various academic institutions. Also, we have a very large group of members from the industry area, those companies that manufacture laboratory equipment and reagents. We're advocates at the national level for critical laboratory issues, for the increased support and resources for our member laboratories. We also provide training and best practices for public health laboratories, especially in policy and programs.
Again, just the mission.
Our history with accreditation. We had a work group that we formed in 2009, and this was really in response to the work of FAB. We started looking at, well, where should the public health laboratories fit into this picture? And we started talking with our board of directors about a possibility of a voluntary laboratory accreditation program. The work group that was formed started off with, okay, let's start with the pros and cons, and I'll get a little bit into some of those. We were then able to have our introductory discussions with FAB that followed up with the think tanks of where we should go and how we could work together. And to be able to further some of those discussions, as well as to market the possibility of voluntary laboratory accreditation to our membership. We've invited Kay to our annual meeting where she's talked about the work of FAB and the possibilities of some future collaborations. It's really been acknowledged, and Kay came right out and said it, that in her presentations to our members, they knew that the laboratories were very well regulated and in many opinions, over-regulated. So we do have a tough sell ahead of us in adding another accreditation to the laboratory work. But these current programs focus on the quality assurance of the testing. They're not really used to design or to evaluate the efficiency or the effectiveness of the organization or how that laboratory organization works within the public health agency. So that's the area that the public health accreditation will look more at. We certainly have enough regulatory information that we don't have to go further. We were able to hold our first think tank, as Kay mentioned, and had great representation from the organizations listed. 23 participants were able to spend the day together discussing the roles of the public health and how it fits in the public health agency, looking for ways that fab and laboratories can work together to market the importance of accreditation. And then to look at the possibility of the laboratory standards into the FAB document as a companion, as somehow to integrate. We haven't gotten that far yet, but that's where we're still working. Lots of ideas. So the results from that think tank discussion was a short-term goal, where we would develop a few discrete and specific standards relating to the laboratory, but then also suggest some additional measures and documentation that could be used as examples to enhance the current FAB standards. Our work group has completed that work, and we have submitted a few draft ideas, and we're just about ready to submit our final report in the next few weeks. So we're very excited about that. A long-term goal for us, though, is to develop a comprehensive set of standards and measure for the public health laboratories. And we'll be looking further with FAB of how to work together on that. We will come right out and say, and quote me as often as you want, APHL does not want to become an accrediting body. We definitely want to stay from that. So we definitely, to go through a voluntary phase, we'll be looking for a partner to be that body. Our recommendations that we made after the think tank was, of course, to continue the collaboration. We found that to be very important. And again, to follow up with further discussions on how to incorporate these standards. We would like to take a more active role in the tribal work group, if possible. We realize at APHL that's an area that we're not very active in working with the tribal agencies on their laboratories. And we'd like to work on that kind of across the board, not just in accreditation. We're looking to see what other ways that laboratorians and laboratories can be involved in the FAB process. One way in particular is encouraging a tour of the laboratory as part of the site visit, if time and location permits. As Kay mentioned, the laboratorians have a great history in quality improvement activities. That's a huge part of our regulatory agencies and part of the survey process. So we're really encouraging that we share our expertise and help all of the agencies further their quality improvement activities. I wanted to talk a little bit about where we are in the laboratory accreditation process, of where we are in developing our standards. What we're currently looking at is starting to develop, and we're working on utilizing the international standards. ISO 9001, some of you may be familiar with, they are used primarily in industry or international labs. For example, those laboratories that do business internationally as well as domestically. It's a great measurement. The accreditation process is extremely cumbersome, very much based on documentation and having the right paperwork in order. The cost to the public health laboratories to do an ISO accreditation is very high, and as with all health agencies, budgeting is an issue. So we're looking at pulling from those standards those elements that we can use to help kind of bridge the gap for this point in time. But by using internationally recognized standards, we can help prepare the laboratories so they could eventually be going toward that ISO standards if they'd like to. The CLSI, which is Clinical Laboratory, the Clinical Laboratory Standards Institute is very well known in the laboratory community. CLSI develops standards and guidelines, not as an accrediting body, but to help people make and meet their regulatory requirements. They have a program called the Quality System Essentials, which is 12 areas of the laboratory that can be used to build your laboratory's quality systems into a stronger and more robust organization and program. There are a lot of references available for people that want to use the Quality Systems Essentials, so we thought by using that as a framework for developing our standards, we don't have to develop all the resources as well, trying to make use of what's already out there and what is recognized in the laboratory community. And then, of course, we really want to make sure that our standards incorporate our Laboratory System Improvement Program, or LSIP. And I'll talk a little bit more about how LSIP is going to fit in just a bit. As I mentioned, the challenges are definitely there. An additional regulatory burden is the first thing that comes up anytime anyone in the laboratory field hears the word accreditation. We are subject to CLIA, which is from CMS, the FDA, DHS, USDA, Department of Transportation. Depending on what type of testing is done in what laboratory, there's always a regulatory body that will come in and inspect the laboratories. But again, these are focused on the quality assurance of the testing, not the functions or the organization, or definitely not the interaction with the health department. One of the major arguments against accreditation is the financial concerns. We're already worried that by using funds for the laboratory budget for accreditation, that may take away from some of the services that could be required, that are required to maintain the public's health. So we are also concerned that if a laboratory does not perform well, then maybe some of those funds will be taken away again, and possibly privatization of laboratory functions will be discussed, that should this work be sent elsewhere. So we want to make sure that the money would be there to help those laboratories that may still need to build some of their quality improvement activities. Legal implementations are out there. What if that gives someone a false sense of security that just because they've passed an accrediting body that their tests are perfect? We all know that that can't necessarily always be the case, but we want to make sure that the accreditation doesn't give a false sense of security or a false sense of capability and capacity. So to talk a little bit about our Laboratory System Improvement Program, again, that's based on the 10 essential services. And when the planning was done, it was decided to use the essential services similar to the NPHPSP format. But we changed it a little bit and did the CAST, or the Capacity Assessment for State Title V, because that is also based on essential services, but asks a smaller number of questions, gets more group discussion going. And so that worked better with our group, and we've been very happy with the results from that. We started putting the LSIP program together in 2004, and the beta tests were done in 2005 and 6, with the final product out in 2007. At this point, the goals for this was to bring together the system partners. Laboratorians historically tend to stay in their space and not necessarily interact well with others. We're trying to make sure that the laboratorians get out, be a little bit more visible, learn who their partners are. That was a very big education tool for many of the labs that first started it, was to sit down and actually make a list of who their possible partners were. And really, it's anyone that contributes to the public health laboratory practice in that state. And it's anyone who may request public health lab testing or anyone that utilizes those results for their work in their agencies. So to try to help this out, we did develop a one-page definition of what a public health laboratory system is. And that actually mushroomed or jumped into a public health report supplement that we just had published this spring, where we explored the public health laboratory systems by many peer-reviewed articles. And that journal is that supplement is available online for those that might be interested in following up on it. Because we were using the essential services, many of the laboratorians weren't as familiar with them. So we also decided at the same time to develop a laboratory core function document. I do have some copies of it with me if you need it. It's also available on our website. But being laboratories and laboratorians and very detail-oriented, we couldn't stop at 10 to match the essential services. We have 11. And there's a proposal on the table to go up to maybe 12. Right now, we are at the 11, and what we have done so that we could help be able to utilize the information that was already available, to be able to utilize the same standards that are being used, we created a crosswalk so we can actually see what is covered where. And I've just listed it on here so you all are aware of it. You have it if you need it for your future information. At this point in time, we have had 23 states have completed the LSIP assessment. We have two more states scheduled, they're both in December, and we're very excited that next week the City of Milwaukee Health Department is going to, they've adapted our tool, and they are going to try it for their local system. And this will be very interesting because the state of The state of Wisconsin had not been through the LSIP process as of yet. Do I have anyone from Wisconsin in the room? Okay. Well, the state laboratory didn't want to be outshined or outshone by the city. So the state is one of the ones that's going to be doing their assessment in December. So we'll be doing a local assessment next week in November, a state assessment in December. And we're very excited about the local because this is the first time the tool has been used this way. We've gone through an evaluation process with the group. Actually, the City of Milwaukee staff has done a lot of the work. We've just made sure that they've kept within meeting the same standards that we wanted to make sure that are met, that the goals are still there. And then that result of their work will be shared. The tool will be revised if needed again for locals, but we're hoping then more of the local laboratories will take advantage of that. Some of the technical assistance that we offer from the association to the states so that they're able to go through the process is we have some multimedia training videos and PowerPoints that they can utilize. So they don't have to develop everything from scratch. We have video training so that the facilitator and the theme note takers are trained and all hear the same information. We're very fortunate through our cooperative agreement with CDC that we're able to provide $4,000 seed money that they can use to help offset printing costs or room rental. Most of the time it's used for lunch. Always feed people, they'll come. We have technical assistance calls. Each cycle, we'll actually go through some of the processes and talk about where you should be at such and such a point. Have you created your list of invitees? Have you created your agenda for the day? And then we also have an online resource center that people can go in and search. They can search by the essential service. You can search by the core function of the laboratory, or just by any keywords. and resources that other states have used, or things we've found on the internet, or books we've located. They're all on this website. It's available for anyone to use. Examples of improvement activities, all located on the APHL website. Some of the results that have happened because of performing an LSIP. New partnerships have been formed, again, because laboratories had not always identified who their partners were. They've been able to establish new or strengthen previous ones, especially noted when we've sent out the after action survey is the strengthening that has happened through academia, veterinary laboratories, the environmental laboratories if they weren't already part of the public health system, and of course the clinical laboratories. Work groups have been formed through many of these, and they focus on strategic planning both for the laboratory and for the system. Many new communication needs were identified, and one of the products we hear most frequently is newsletters have been started. That was an inexpensive way of letting the partners know what's going on in the laboratory and keeping them up to date. Activities that are ongoing in many areas, customer service satisfaction surveys, which is actually interestingly enough to find that they weren't necessarily being sent to some of the public health agencies. The public health laboratories are required to do customer service, but they were sending them to the clinical laboratories who they're used to doing tests for. They've now expanded that in many cases to talk to other agents, other parts of the agency. Courier systems to get the specimens brought in a timely manner. That was a huge area that needed improvement and has been able to take care. Other quality improvement projects, too numerous to count. And one of my favorites is that there's now some advisory committees out there where the agencies actually meet with the laboratories to talk about what their needs are, what new testing they're hearing about that would help in their surveillance issues or their testing issues. So at this point, I'd like to thank you for your attention. If you need more information on our LSIP program, it is available on our website. All of the documents are available to download. And we're looking at LSIP as a cornerstone for our accreditation program and being able to build on it with FAB to see how we decide that is a requirement of accreditation or a component to be somehow built in based on the standards that we're building. So thank you very much. And I'll turn it over to Justin.
Thank you. Good afternoon. As was mentioned earlier, from the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, National Center for Environmental Health, Environmental Health Services Branch, which is home to the Environmental Public Health Performance Standards, which is the topic of my talk today. We'll take a closer look at the Environmental Public Health Performance Standards and then kind of make a shift there, look at the connection between those performance standards and the public health accreditation process. And also spend a little bit of time highlighting some of the FAB Environmental Public Health Think Tank activities. I wanted to mention the mission of the Environmental Health Services Branch at CDC, which is essentially to support the practice of environmental public health and those practitioners who are delivering those services. So considering that mission, the Environmental Public Health Service, the Environmental Public Health Performance Standards are an example of the types of programs that help the Environmental Health Services Branch meet their mission. The Environmental Public Health Performance Standards are constructed in a similar format as the National Public Health Performance Standards, while they address the 10 essential environmental public health services and the ability of local, state, and tribal environmental health departments to perform those 10 essential services. Just wanted to give a kind of an overview of really some of the broad variety of topic areas that environmental public health works in. Those areas range from food service inspections to outbreak investigations, pollution prevention, drinking water quality, wastewater, vector control. So pretty broad array of public health areas. And I'll mention that one, this isn't necessarily an exhaustive tally of areas. And I'll also mention that a lot of these areas overlap into other departments within the public health agency as a system. The environmental public health performance standards, again, based on the 10 essential environmental public health services, are really an assessment tool and quality improvement tool. The environmental health department that sits down and works through the standards has an opportunity to identify strengths and weaknesses or areas that need improvement. So they walk away from that assessment process really understanding, again, their strengths, but then also where there may be gaps in service delivery as based on those 10 essential services. Leads to an understanding of barriers to program improvement. We promote the performance standards as a quality improvement tool. So after working through the process, initially understanding what gaps may exist, attempting to improve or improving those areas, revisiting the performance standards then for a second time really helps to facilitate that quality improvement process and kind of create that continual move toward improvement. One of the other huge benefits that we see with the performance standards is that it really fosters relationships within the environmental public health department itself and also outside of that department with other entities within the public health system. And we also encourage involvement of other stakeholders that may even be from the community or other organizations. Down the road and in the future, we hope to get to a point where we're collecting results from the assessment process. It would be self-reported from those environmental health departments engaging in the performance standards. The big benefit there is that we could analyze that data and really paint a national picture of environmental health issues and trends, which then provides a very valuable knowledge base for decision makers or other organizations maybe allocating funds or developing initiatives to address areas of environmental public health. on the topic of quality improvement, use of the performance standards really kind of allows that ability to step outside of the everyday operations where we may feel that the system's there and we're getting results, but until we step outside and really take a look at what is happening and how those services are being performed and delivered, we can't answer questions like whether or not we know if services are improving or are the right things being done. So allows that assessment process and get a good view of that service delivery system. Benefits of using the performance standards, of course, number one benefit, delivering higher quality services through that quality improvement process. We talk about efficiency and effectiveness, which, those two factors there, improving quality, looking at efficiency and effectiveness, of course, are going to translate into reduction in environmental health risk factors and environmentally related disease, reduction of environmentally related disease, which ultimately we intend will improve health outcomes and health status. I wanted to shift gears a little bit and look a little more closely at the connection between the environmental public health performance standards and public health accreditation. When we look at the goal of accreditation, we see a lot of the same core components that the performance standards are really looking at, and that's quality and performance. FAB looks at quality and performance of all health departments in the country, state, local, territorial, and tribal. So we also see that some of the other key areas, credibility, visibility. So these are all areas that I think that there's some overlap between working through the performance standards and preparing for the accreditation process, which I wanted to kind of highlight now in terms of preparation for that process, which is really where we see another big benefit for using the performance standards. we would really look toward that quality improvement component there, being able to show that ability within the Environmental Public Health Department, also hopefully contributing to community health assessments and also strategic planning with the identification of gaps and areas that we need to address within the public health, environmental public health arena and public health system as a whole. So again, I mentioned that benefit for preparation for the accreditation review. And I have a few slides that'll look a little more closely within the standards, but what we're really looking for here is that ability to prior to the accreditation review, have a detailed look at environmental public health and its connection to public health. Develop that documentation or evidence base that FAB's gonna be looking for when they come on site to do their accreditation review, so that the Environmental Public Health Department is going to be prepared to respond to those areas and have a good understanding of how they're meeting those elements within those FAB standards. I also mentioned use of the performance standards to build relationships. So that's one other key component there that prior to the accreditation review, we really encourage bringing all hands to the table so that environmental public health is connecting with the laboratories and connecting with administration, and we're really understanding where the interconnectedness is, I guess, and how all those departments really need to work together to promote quality public health as a whole. So just to look a little more closely within the standards, you can really see the connection there between the 10 essential services, where the environmental public health essential service number 2 focuses on diagnosing and investigating environmental health problems and health hazards in the community. FAB domain 2 is really geared on those same lines there with investigating health problems and environmental public health hazards to protect the community. When we look even closer then within those standards, we really see that connection again between those 10 essential services and where use of the performance standards really does have a benefit for preparation for that accreditation review, having thought through a lot of these areas beforehand, and again, developed that documentation evidence base. Earlier, Dr. Bender mentioned, or highlighted, I guess, the example of, maybe environmental public health contributing to the regulatory aspects of the public health department. I just had a few other examples listed here that I really wanted to highlight just to kind of show that, the public health as a whole, all these areas that FAB has recognized through their think tanks, really need to collaborate and work together. But these are areas that, just some other examples where I think that environmental public health can contribute. Talk about analyzing public health data to identify trends in health problems, environmental public health hazards, and social and economic risk. These are things that, collecting the data anyways, identifying data, identifying trends, these are things that environmental public health contributes to almost on a daily basis through inspections and investigations. Standard 5.4B focuses on all hazards and emergency response planning. Environmental public health has really had an ever-increasing role in this area and is extremely involved in the emergency response planning process. And then standard 8.1B, which looks at the workforce, something that environmental public health has really focused in on over these last few years and can contribute through really promoting a qualified workforce with certain appointment standards for positions. There's credentialing with the registered environmental health specialist credential or registered sanitarian credential, and also maintaining that through continuing education that's acquired through training. Now I just wanted to touch on the FAB Environmental Public Health Think Tank and really highlight some of the activities there, which has resulted in a review of the standards and recommendations for environmental public health and inclusion within the accreditation process, and also identified ways to ensure that environmental public health is represented during the accreditation review, and then also determining the best way for environmental public health to contribute. So those were all areas that were discussed in the last think tank meeting that FAB had hosted in December. And FAB has been extremely receptive to all of the recommendations that the think tank has made. But it was great because it brought, I think, roughly 30 environmental health practitioners together from across the nation at all different levels, and really worked through, you know, how these worked through the issues that could arise, you know, on site during the accreditation review, and issues that internally, you know, these organizations are going to face, and really helped to look at the role that environmental public health plays in the accreditation process. So in conclusion, the performance standards, environmental public health performance standards, are really an assessment and quality improvement tool. And we see a real connection there to public health accreditation. And we look forward to continuing that work and collaboration. And we'll continue that with the next think tank this spring. And lastly, I'd like to mention that that last bullet there has the web address for the Environmental Health Services Branch through the CDC website, and that's where the Environmental Public Health Performance Standards standards and assessment tool can be accessed at. Thank you.
Thank you, Kay, Karen, and Justin. We now have just a little bit of time for some discussion and questions and answers, about 20 minutes. And one thing I want to mention is that one of the nice things about these think tanks, and of course some of the others that have occurred, have really bred a lot of interest and opportunity for specifically prompting participation from environmental public health, from laboratorians in the beta test process, as site reviewers, and also kind of taking a close look at some of the opportunities with beta test sites. So it really set the stage for, I think, maximizing what came out of the beta test process. And I know Kay didn't go into depth on some of the beta test specifics, but that's just been really nice kind of ongoing way of collaborating and continuing to sustain the momentum of those discussions. So any questions? Yes. Kay's the especially strong expert in that area. So.
You know, that's a great question. I get asked it a lot since I am one. I used to be one, whatever, depending on your frame of reference. But, you know, it's a real challenge to construct standards and measures and documentation guidance that reflects those core capacities. And address the very important role that the various disciplines like public health nurses, environmentalists, social workers, nutritionists, laboratory, we could go on forever, that they play. It's the whole team, of course, that makes it all come together. FAB chose, based on recommendations from our early work, to stay out of discipline-specific standards and measures. Just because that's, as you know, a growing and unique body of work. But I'd be less than honest if I didn't say that we still do get, particularly in these tough economic times, around that domain that speaks to workforce, we still do get comments about, I wish you would say that in order to serve a population of 500,000 or 25,000, whatever it is, you really need this kind of staffing configuration, including public health nurses. And I wish we had the data, the science, to be able to put that in there. Because in my venture over to the dark side, when I worked as dean and associate vice chancellor for nursing, I can tell you that there were a number of times when having those staffing ratios for some of the critical care areas, particularly in the hospital, it in budget cut times to have those from Joint Commission or whom, Magnet or whomever, were extremely helpful. Difference is there's evidence there. And so I guess I would just say back to you that we recognize it's a concern. We recognize that there's down the road probably more that FAB should say. But this is one of those areas where we need very specific kinds of evidence in order to know how best to handle that. Oh, yeah. Well, as a matter of fact, it varies. It varies. And that's one of the things that, first of all, let me go back and say of our 97 site reviewers, probably at least 26 of those were environmental health folks. I think 5 or 6 were laboratorians, and probably another 12 to 15 were public health nurse leaders. So we had lots of public health nurses. And there's one thing about public health nurses, not to exclude any other disciplines, but they get this stuff. I mean, because we're taught it in our educational programs. And so that's been really good. Whether the public health nursing director or that department or division was included in the site visits and all that was really a product of what the director of that department chose, because we didn't dictate who came to the table. We stayed with the topics of discussion. The site review teams asked for clarification for particular standards and measures. If those naturally included public health nursing, then yes, they were there. Or if the public health nursing director was automatically part of the leadership team, then that person was there. But I'd be less than honest to say that that varied with the sort of the organizational culture back home. Yeah. As a matter of fact, I'm going to talk to the Public Health Training Center Network tomorrow about that very, about the last part. Academics and Public Health Training Centers, I'll lump together and answer it, and then if you want to talk more specifically, we can. You know, FAB's encouraging, and for those of you who were in the last session, you heard a lot of that, that we're encouraging health departments while they're waiting for us to do all these revisions. The thing that won't change is the prerequisites. And so if a health department wants to get ready for accreditation, in our view, because it's complex work and it's time consuming, they need to be working on the community health assessment, the community health improvement plan, and the agency strategic plan. And there have been faculty and consultants for health departments all over the country from both academia and from public health training centers to assist health departments with those pieces. And that varies with the relationships that are there, you know, already. We have certainly encouraged health departments to reach out where there's expertise in those areas. And so there's been a lot of that. I've actually, at the Multi-State Learning Collaborative meeting back in September, there were several presentations where Public Health Training Center, Public Health Institutes, and or academic faculty were assisting health departments, particularly with those prerequisites.
Hi, I'm Lon Berkeley. I work at the Joint Commission and the division that deals with ambulatory care. We accredit over 18,000 hospitals, nursing homes, home care agencies, laboratories, as well as ambulatory care, which is the area that I focus on. Provided some assistance as a K and to help address some of the trials and tribulations we've gone through as we evolve our accreditation program and request to include a number of health departments within that. We want to continue to provide whatever assistance we can, both to share the lessons learned, whether it's to help shortcut the pain that it takes to both develop standards, train the surveyors, as we call them, or to figure out how to assign accreditation decision after the outcome. So I hope, Karen, I don't know, I didn't hear anything in terms of your presentation, but we have a health connection with the folks who are doing the laboratory accreditation at our end, and to determine if there's a way to continue to joint venture, a dovetail that basically maximize the lessons that we've had in progress, so that the health departments that choose to go through the FAB approach, those that choose to utilize some of the other accrediting bodies besides the Joint Commission, that there's a way to minimize the burden on the service providers, but maximize the benefit in general that accreditation provides overall.
Thank you.
Hi, I'm Robin Cox, and I'm from the Solano County Public Health Department. I'm the Director of Health Education. I also serve as our Public Information Officer, so I always look for opportunities to work with Environmental Health in our county, which actually is in a completely separate department. It's not even in Health and Social Services. It's actually under our Resource Management Division. And also with our lab, and I'm a huge supporter of our labs. I feel like sometimes our labs are kind of unsung heroes in public health, and always look for opportunities to try to, in our public information, get information out about the critical nature of all of the comprehensive parts of public health. And so I have to also mirror that in looking at the think tank list, I was sitting here feeling really concerned because I don't see any mention of health education as a discipline. So Dr. Bender, I hear your comments, and I'm trying to kind of think on my feet about the implications of not having discipline-specific capabilities up there. But I'm also really concerned, and I'm trying to kind of put this together with health reform and the fact that, you know, where we're going, it seems like we don't all stand together in public health and say it takes a comprehensive group of us from all the disciplines to try to really infuse the essential services. I think, you know, if we don't stand together, we're going to fall apart. And I really think that although it's hard, I would advocate that, you know, I for one would like to stand with you to try to identify what are some specific health education standards that we can measure. Because we are clearly woven throughout all of those essential functions, and to the degree, you know, we help the lab communicate to the community, we help environmental health with foodborne outbreaks and restaurant outbreaks. So many of the things that we do are integral to all of these pieces, let alone our work on policy development, on reducing tobacco, and I can go on and on. But it's across the whole spectrum of prevention. And so I have to say, I've been kind of struggling before the session trying to find the standards related to my specific discipline. I couldn't really find them. Now I understand why. But trying to advocate that, can we try to address that as we go forward? And even though it's hard, you may have a think tank. In California, the directors of health education have a group called the California Conference of Local Directors of Health Education, where counterparts of mine get together across the state, and maybe that could even be a forum for you for these things perhaps. So just wanted to address those concerns.
Thank you. There's a lot in that. But all good, so thank you. Let me say on the outset that just because you may not, first of all, I hope you will find your hook with accreditation in the work we're doing. So let me say that, because we certainly recognize that's important. Secondly, just because we don't have a discipline named somewhere doesn't mean that we haven't had that discipline-specific input, consultation, and expertise. And if I knew how to work this a little better up here, I'd go back to the slide where I had the domains listed, but look at Liza. She's so tough there. Because we have domain three, which is all about both health education, well, all three things, health education, health literacy, and public, if you don't have a seizure, we'll get to it in a minute, the domains. There you go, thank you. I engage and educate about public health issues and functions. And understand, this is only the domain. We've got standards up under that and measures up under there. So hearkening back to the examples that you heard from my colleagues in the lab and the environmental health community, first thing, please go to our website if you haven't already. Look at the standards and measures under, especially Domain 3. Look at all of them, but that's where your stuff is largely at this point. And tell us, just like Environmental Health and Lab have said, and I'll quote Scott Becker on the lab one, okay? Scott said, you know, the measures you have there about lab in Domain 2 when it talks about investigating health and diagnosing health problems are fine. I mean, he talks about things like getting good reports from the lab and being able to follow up. He said, but good grief, that if we were in elementary school, that would be like kindergarten. And he said, let's bump it up a notch. Let's bump it up a notch. And so what APHL is helping us to do is bump it up a notch. And so I would ask you to look at three especially, because there are three components there that are embedded, and it's the health literacy, health education, and then public information. And we know they're not perfect. We've got lots of comments on those from the beta test, but it's not too late. So start there just like they did. And then as we mature a little bit and get this early work out of the way, just like you're hearing with these two, if you identify areas specifically, I'd love to come to California. But we, any forum that we have where we can engage disciplines and dialogue about how to strengthen the standards and make this work for health departments, we're all about that. So thank you for that offer, and you'll be sorry that you offered it, because we'll probably take you up on it. But start, please, by looking at that domain, because that's our quickest work that we need to wrap up in order to launch this first set for next year. And I can tell you that we don't have them quite right yet.
One word that I've heard you mention, it's been on the screen a number of times, is the word quality. And I'm wondering how you wrestled with defining quality.
You want me to take that one, too? Yeah. Wrestle is a good word, and Dr. Les Veitch, who's one of my board members in the audience back there, has been a key wrestler, along with Dr. Bill Riley, who's the chair of my board right now from the University of Minnesota. The short version of that is we've tried to move the industry from taking the quality improvement models and applications in the healthcare arena and just simply trying to plop those down, if you will, in the middle of public health and assume those will work. And so Dr. Veitch and Dr. Riley and others working from our accreditation coalition actually crafted a very nice definition of quality improvement for public health. Talks about the difference between what they call little QI and big QI, the difference between evaluating programs and processes, and then moving up to a much more sophisticated, comprehensive approach for the public health department as a whole, and maybe even the system. That definition and that work is published in the Journal of Public Health Management and Practice, January, February 2010, I think. Les, is that right? That's right, okay. So FAB is starting there. And using that work as the cornerstone for Domain 9 especially, and for the sort of overarching principles around quality improvement in public health. The other work that's informed what we've done has been the Multi-State Learning Collaborative. And of course, Robert Wood Johnson funded 16 states to work on those. Those are largely small QI kind of projects, but when you look back up and look at them as a whole, they've informed our work a lot. Les, do you want to add anything to that?
That was very comprehensive.
The other thing is tomorrow at 12:30, Dr. Bill Riley and I will be doing a session on accreditation. Again, some of the slides you'll see, but Dr. Riley's going to take the quality improvement cornerstone a little bit further. So if you're available for that session, you might want to sit in on that, because he and Dr. Veitch are our experts in that area.
And I would add that in that same issue that the definition is published, that whole issue is focused on quality improvement in public health.
Yeah.
And so there are articles that Kay Bender and Paul Halverson wrote on the FAB accreditation and how that's intended to drive public quality improvement. There's one about the performance standards and the role of quality improvement. At least several articles about the MLC work. And so it kind of spans what's out there and shows a little bit of what we're jumping off of.
Do you find it's a pretty mature consensus at this point?
No. It's budding.
That was the most painful process to come up with that definition.
Yeah, we just started with the definition. It just got published this year. It's very, let's see, if this were a child, I would say we're toddling, maybe.
With temper tantrums.
And so we've got a lot of work to do. A lot of work to do. Let me probe that question. I do know about it. My school of nursing that I left as dean operated on a shared governance model, and I'm active in APHA on the board, and APHA is a shared governance model. So I understand that. I'm curious, are you asking if we're considering that in the governance part of the recommendations here or in how we operate? Yeah, you know, that's tricky. It's real tricky because if you've worked with it, you know that really has to, at least in my experience, has to be it has to bubble up from all areas of an organization in order for it to work, at least in my experience. Two comments about that. To the extent that the shared governance modeling is embedded as we encourage health departments to not try to do it all and identify those partners and get input and involve not that's not only internally but externally as well. So those same principles are there. We haven't and probably won't go far enough, at least in the short run, to use shared governance as a phrase or the modeling because we've stayed away deliberately from identifying or promoting a particular model of governing. So to the extent that public health is all shared and collaborative and based on consensus, but I hope you understand where we're going with that. And that is really for us to tell a health department how they need to set up their governance, we think is a stretch for us right now. But it's a great question. You want to do some research on that, that'd be good.
Kay, I'd like to say a little bit about how the accreditation process breaks down silos.
Good, go for it.
I'm afraid I hear people in here defending their profession. And we were a beta test site in Kentucky, a small health department. And if you will work through the self-assessment tool, you will see that brings everybody to the table. Everybody is very essential. And especially our health educators, we could not have gotten through the experience, which I think was successful, without our health educators. The electronic filing system, they had a skill set that nobody else in the health department had. The media relations and the communications with our partners could not have been carried off without the health educators. I tend to point to the H1N1 effort as maybe an example of how H1N1 is very much, it's a very different subject, but everybody came together to fight H1N1 and make that successful. And we did the same thing with accreditation. And in my health department, we did it at the same time.
Thank you.